All right, good afternoon, everybody. Nice to see you again. I hitched a ride with Garrett and Joanna today because we had an earlier Conqueror Series 11, and Michelle had some stuff to do, so she dropped me off at the park and ride and went back to do what she needed to do. But on the way back here, you know, I was listening to him talk and all that. We parked, and then at the end, I thought I was being disrespected by Garrett because I sat in the back. Garrett and Joanna, of course, were in front. And then as Joanna got out, Garrett said, "Hey, do you want to help get that crackpot out? It's in the back." And I go, "Wait a minute! I think you meant crock pot. I thought it was a crackpot." I said, "That's not very respectful." But anyway. It's good to know your vocabulary. So anyway, I thought I'd mention it because I got a kick out of it. And, you know, not to mention the fact, it's not something to brag about, but I had a birthday today. Turned 60, the big 6-0. And thank you. And the interesting sidelight is some parts of my family, I won't say who they are, like my daughters-in-law, were talking about whether to put me in a nursing home or a assisted living and all that. So it's really endeared. I felt the love. Just actually, I really enjoy them. I appreciate the banter we have, and they're wonderful. Today, I want to discuss something that's been on my mind for a while, but it was further prompted by a conversation I had with a friend from work who is a Christian. He tries to be. And he's a good friend from a standpoint of our discussion for many years. His name is Mike Granchi, so it doesn't matter. But during a conversation about business, we pause once in a while to talk about religious things. And he said to me that he met someone who told him something that really, really hit him strong. And it was someone who told him about grace and that Jesus Christ's sacrifice was the ultimate. It was such an ultimate sacrifice that there is nothing we can do to earn salvation, which is nothing new to us. And then he said to me, "This is so awesome. So really, we don't have to do much because God, Christ died for us." And he said, "You know, you keep that Sabbath, right?" I said, "Yes, I do." He said, "Well, you know, that's not really necessary now, based on what he knew." He wasn't criticizing me. He was very careful not to be critical. He was just saying, you know, maybe that's a burden you don't have to carry. And at the end of our conversation, I said to him, "You know, I absolutely agree with you. There's nothing we can do to earn salvation. Nothing. Period. However, observing the Sabbath does not necessarily mean you're trying to earn salvation. It could be something else." And I brought up a couple of scriptures to him, which you might know, well, which I know you know. A couple of them, "Don't think I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I didn't come to destroy, but to fulfill. I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, not one jot or tittle will by no means pass from the law till all be fulfilled." And I said, you know, jokingly, "This is someone I can talk to like this. I still see the heavens and the earth." So he understood. And I said, "It also says about in John that if you love me, you keep my commandments." And then I mentioned Zechariah 14, where I said, "Well, you know, Christ is here on earth reigning, and he's punishing nations that don't keep the Feast of Tabernacles." So I said, "Maybe there's something to discuss more." He said, "Yeah, you know, that's very interesting. You're right. There's some boundaries we should not cross, in spite of the fact that Christ did die for us, that there are boundaries God has put in place." So he said, "We should get together sometime and discuss more of this." So which we will do. But one thing that struck me was that this is not a new belief. I told him, this is not a new belief that because Christ died for us, we don't have to keep anything else. And that's true from a salvation standpoint. But I don't know how long this controversy has been going on, but we know that there's this dichotomy between the Old Testament and the New Testament. I think it's been going for a long time, between the law and love. And we know there's only one God, yet The Christian world sees two gods, the one who, Old Testament God, right, and the New Testament God, or the love God and the law God. And as my friend expressed, because of Christ's sacrifice, the law no longer is necessary. However, I don't, as you know here, this is kind of captive audience. I don't believe the Bible supports that notion. As if that because Christ died, if we kept the law, then we're not really doing the love justice. Or once Christ died, we have the law, the love, then we don't need the law. I think the Bible actually teaches the opposite, and I think you agree with me in that. In fact, I believe this sincerely. If we observe the law with its true physical intent, understanding that it does not earn us salvation, I think we will be expressing God's love. Again, if we observe the law with its true spiritual intent, physical and spiritual intent, understanding it does not earn us salvation, we will be expressing God's love. So today, this afternoon, I want to discuss that, to show that God's law and love are not mutually exclusive. In fact, they're complementary, compatible, complementary, in fact, integrated together. And I don't want to make this discussion a doctrinal one, because we all know the scriptures. It's more of a, I would say, a philosophical, logical discussion about this issue, because we could kind of doctrine each other to death of, well, I got this scripture. We work out our own salvation with fear and trembling, so we'll let you sort that out individually. But I thought I'd present something that might be thought-provoking to some extent, and if it's not, then, you know, just endure, and hopefully I'll be preaching scripture that is valid and that you at least get something out of it. I'm going to focus the discussion on three general areas that affect us. That's time, our money, and our behavior. So if you would help me along, I just want to ask a few questions and then maybe build from that. To start off, this is the first question. What are the non-religious holidays that our country observes? Again, not a trick question, just generally. There's Memorial Day, right? Martin Luther King, Labor Day? President's Day, okay. Lincoln's birthday, right? Yes? No, that's a movie. No, I was kidding. Yes. So, let me ask the follow-up question. Why do we have these holiday observances? What is their purpose? I mean, in general. Yes, Hallmark. Hallmark needs to make their buck. Celebrate what? No, so why do we celebrate? For what purpose? Yeah, memorial, to remember the past. What's that? Barbecues. Oh, to have barbecues? Yeah, that's not... To give honor? Yeah, Veterans Day, Memorial Day, that's right. And some Thanksgiving would fall around. I know some people consider it religious, but really it can be either one. I would say, I think it also helps us to remember the important events in our nation's history, right? It also, I would say, helps inform the younger generation who weren't there about these events that occurred. It's sort of a teaching tool. Tradition, yes. The honor, the memory of those who served. It reminds us as who we are as a nation, what we stand for. And it reminds us again also of what made our nation the way it is now, the sacrifices that were given. So, we have that. Let me ask you another follow-up question to this. What are some of the religious holidays considered Christian that our nation observes? Now, this is not what's right or wrong, but what do we tend to observe in general? Christmas, Easter, and devil-worshipping Halloween. We do that. I'm sorry? Yes, Good Friday. Yep. Those of you who are Irish, St. Patrick's Day, right? How about Valentine's? That's the show supposedly love St. Valentine, but it's another Hallmark moment. Again, the follow-up question is, why are these religious holidays observed?
Money.
Okay, money. Well, some actually are more than money, but there's money. Right. Yeah, tradition. Well, I think it's pretty much the same as why they observe national holidays. It's to remember important religious events. You know, the St. Patrick's, Valentine's, but we kind of commercialize them. It reminds Christians, again, when I say Christians, I mean traditionally, who they are, what they stand for. To some people, it honors the birth of Christ, you know, Christmas, even though we know better in many ways. So it honors also the memory of those considered important in Christian history. Next follow-up question, you might know where I'm leading up to, but what are some of the events families observe or traditions families have? This is, I mean, not a trick question. Birthdays. Some don't observe, but some do. Anniversaries, such as wedding anniversary. Very important to observe wedding anniversaries. That's to preserve life if you forget, especially the husband. Yes, that's right. Graduations, yes. I know the ladies have this tradition. They go tent camping somewhere with Umberfields and somewhere once a year. At least that's what they've been doing. And Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, do you have the all leady guy thing in Drummond or somewhere where you go and meet once a year? What was that? Yeah, hunting camp. Now, my kids were younger, Michelle and I had, well, actually, I would say Michelle was more the driving force. She decided we need to be together as a family to bond and to enjoy the outdoors. So we went tent camping for many, many years, you know, till Garrett went to college. And one reason we did it was we wanted to establish a tradition for a family to bond. And there was always that question, can we bring a friend? And in this case, we said, most of the time, but in this case, it's family. And why do you think we do all these things, generally? Why do we observe these events? Again, not a trick question. Yes, right. Same thing, to remember important events in the family history, you know, your wedding anniversary. Inform the younger members of the family of those events to honor, you know, they have Father's Day sometimes, and Mother's Day. I know it's commercialized, but we do use it, right, to respect Mom and Dad. Buy him his toys, special toys. They build a bond among family members. And, you know, I've got Benaiah now and introduce them to some of our family traditions. When Garrett and Miles got married, it was a wonderful blessing that Joanna and Heather liked to go camping too. Because that could have been like an awkward moment where I don't really want to go camping. But they embraced the whole thing. And now we have Benaiah, and he's going to, well, I don't think we're going camping, but we're going to do something, God willing, again this year, and he's going to be introduced into that. And it sort of builds that bond through a family. It builds a sense of unity and purpose and just belonging. Because why? We're so busy. And doing this kind of allows us to have time for one another, at least to remember by. They have a lot of memories. We have a lot of pictures. You know, those come along. So this is the big question then. If nations can have special observances to remind its people of who they are, what the important events are in history to honor its citizens, and remind them of what it stands for, if religions have their traditions and special days to remind its members of what's important, who they are, why they do what they do, who they honor, and to unify them as a group, and if families, if our families, have certain traditions, special days they observe to build a bond among family members, to remember who they are, what's important to the family. Why, I ask, do some people find it so difficult to understand and accept that our God, who created us, has a plan for us from the very beginning, established days that are special to him, to give us, his people, a time to worship him, to learn about him, to draw close to him, and to be with our fellow believers, and to remind us annually of the events of things he's planned for us. You know, and of course, to honor some of the important, the most important one is Passover, the death of Christ. How come everyone else can do it, but when the Bible talks about its special days, they're considered by some not relevant? Right? We've got nations doing it, families doing it, other religions do it. But when it comes to the Sabbath and the holy days, wow, that's not right. I think you know what I'm saying. They don't all criticize it, but I'm just saying it doesn't make logical sense why God, who's given us the true holy days, and I believe the plan, that we are reminded of, we've got the Sabbath. One reason we can do all these prayers is because we come here, not because we're forced to. What I'm saying then is that observing God's law, which includes the observance of these holy days, is an expression of God's love for us. It enables us to have time with God and, right here, fellow believers, to build a bond of love, to follow and allow us to encourage one another, to remind us that he has a plan of salvation for all mankind, for those who want it and who act on it. Now, another question, set of questions. How does our country sustain itself financially? Debt, yes. Taxes, we don't agree with it, but we've got sales tax, property tax, income tax, federal state tax, millages tax, right? Also, we have, in those situations where it's not government related, we've got volunteers. You guys, I know some of you donate out of your income. So some of these charity organizations are sustained by money that comes from volunteer offerings, right? We give it. And so, like it or not, it's used for things to pay for buildings, roads, the upkeep of highways, salaries of firemen, policemen, snow plowing, emergency service, etc. So there's needs some kind of income, right? It's nothing strange. And as families, how do we sustain ourselves financially? Well, someone gets a job, and the lucky ones, you get a big inheritance, maybe a few. Some get government assistance, and then there's bartering. So there's a lot of things going on that are necessary for nations to thrive and for families to thrive. So a big question, kind of in line with what I asked before, if nations have a way to finance its needs, and families need a way to finance its needs and wants, why do some people find it so difficult to accept that God, from the beginning, put in place a financial system, tithes and offerings, to sustain his church, finance the observance of his holy days, individually and collectively, provide a means to help the widows, the fatherless, and the poor of the church? We had an example here where anonymously we contributed to Eva and to Rex Jamerson. But we couldn't have done that without, at least I couldn't have, if I didn't have set aside that money that God said to set aside. So, again, if we obey those financial laws, we're expressing God's love in respecting and honoring him and helping our fellow brethren and other people outside the church. So the point I'm making here is that there are things that God is expecting of us. Again, I know this is a kind of preaching to the choir thing, but I want to think in a, not in a doctrinal detailed way, but in a wide scope that it's okay. This is good stuff. He wants us. He wants us to spend time together with him and with fellow believers. He wants us to help out others who need help and to worship him because everything comes from him. We give a portion to him. That's our tithing law. So I'm not going to go into the details. Just want to mention that. The next thing I want to discuss is our behaviors, tied in love and the law. I've got a lot of questions. How many times is the word love mentioned in the Bible? Just a stab, a guess. Again, it's not a test. Just love is mentioned, according to at least my search, 311 times in the Bible. 311. Jeff's close. Cheating. Are you cheating? No, okay. Yeah, all right. Now, keeping in mind that we've got the Old Testament, which is all law, and the New Testament, which is all love. How many times is the word love, of the 311 times it's mentioned, how many times is the word love mentioned in the New Testament? Of the 311, you're saying 100. 250? Okay. No. Well, actually close. It's 180. Of the 311 times love is mentioned in the Bible, 180 of those mentions is in the New Testament. And guess what? Obviously, if you do your math, 131 matches are in the Old Testament. So 180, 130, we're not talking about a big difference. So someone who tells me love is more mentioned in the Old Testament and New Testament, yes, that's true. But not much. And I did my statistical calculation. The New Testament has 58% of the mention of love, and the Old Testament has 42%. I wouldn't say it's even. You said, yes? Right, that's right. That's a good point. You see where I'm getting here? Right. People say, "Oh, well, that's all love." Well, I'm looking statistically. Now let's go to the next question, which follows normally. How many times is the word law, found in the Bible? Just the whole Bible. Anybody else? I got 275, 500. Okay, 600. Okay, we don't have all day. 523 times. 523. Jeff, you're cheating. 523. 523 times the word law is found in the Bible. Now, I'm using the King James when I did the search. Now, how many times is the word law found in the Old Testament? Of that 523, how much of it is found in the Old Testament? Anybody? 300? Actually, that's perfect. Of 523 mentions of the word law in the Bible, 300 of them are found in the Old Testament, which means 223 times the word law is mentioned in the New Testament. And if you do your statistical calculation, the New Testament has 57% of the mention of law. I'm sorry, the Old Testament has 57%, and the New Testament has 43%. So you kind of switch. One is the Old Testament mentions love a little less than the New Testament, but the New Testament, in terms of law, mentions law a little more than some people think. So you're really talking almost not quite even, but not a drastic... Yes?
You also have to correlate the Old Testament and the New Testament as far as how much material there is.
Sure.
Like for example, in my large print Bible, the Old Testament is over 1,000 pages. The New Testament is only a little over 300. So if you expand the New Testament to be equal to the same number of pages as the Old Testament, it will be far, far ahead with the words law and the words love.
Sure, but that's too technical. But I agree with you. Yes, that's true. And I did my calculation. So the New Testament mentions love more, but by only 16%, which is not a lot. Then the Old Testament mentions the law more, but only by 14% more in the New Testament. The point is, this God, the Old Testament God of law, predominantly does not wash with any of that description or perception that when you look at the Old Testament, that's all law. Well, there's a lot of love in there. So when someone says Old Testament is only about law and the New Testament is only about love, from the word count perspective at least, that statement is not accurate. It's not. You can tell by this. You can look it up yourself. So let's keep going and flesh this out. What is the greatest commandment according to, again, this is not a quiz. That's right. Right. Matthew 22, verses 36 to 38. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? Mark says, which is the first commandment? And the answer is, Jesus said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And you know the answer. Where did that come from? Well, it might be in Leviticus, but in my Bible, at least in my search, it's Deuteronomy chapter 6. That's it, the Shema. It says, Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 and 5. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. Again, Old Testament, love, Jesus quoting it. What is the next great commandment? That's right. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And where did that come from? Yeah. Yes, Leviticus 19, verse 18. You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. So far, it's kind of a synergy between the two I'm seeing here, Old and New Testament. Again, I'm just saying this because we say intuitively, at least in our sense of belief, that, yeah, I know that God is love and it's in the Old Testament, but to kind of concretely put it together, there's that bridge right there between the two. You can't separate them. Because if the Old Testament was not valid, where is he going to get this quote from? Right? So, continuation. It says, on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Right? And so the two most important commandments, love towards God and love towards neighbor, are mentioned first in the Old Testament. And God's expression of love in the New Testament are contained in his laws, which are rooted in the Old Testament. So he's showing in his law love. It's just being repeated in the New Testament. Now, some might say that what Jesus brought was a deeper love, one that was rooted in our hearts. That's why New Testament love is more important, because the Old Testament love was kind of more like generic, straightforward, not the heart part. It's just you gave somebody something, but it doesn't involve the heart. Like, you know, it's been said, don't murder. But Jesus said, but I say to you, he who hates his brother has committed murder in his heart. Well, there's a verse here that I think might contradict that. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 17. Leviticus 19, verse 17 says, you shall not hate your brother in your heart. That's in the Old Testament. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. See, even the idea of love being rooted in our hearts is revealed in the Old Testament. Another verse, James 4:17. Some of you might know what's that say. He who knows to do good but does it not, to him it is sin. Well, let's go to Deuteronomy 22, verse 4. Deuteronomy 22, verse 4. Here, 22, verse 4 says, you shall not see your brother's donkey or his ox fall down alone.